Hi, and welcome to Sybil's Book Club on blackamericaweb.com. I am Sybil Wilkes from the Tom Joyner Morning Show, and it gives me great pleasure to speak with a young woman of whom I am a big fan, and you know her from WABC. She's a news anchor there. Her name is Lori Stokes. Hi, Lori.
Well, hi, Sybil. First of all, I am your biggest fan, not just because of your work, but because you describe me as a young woman. That I'm loving.
Okay, Mutual Admiration Society then, okay? Yes. Okay, young woman, here we go. We're here to talk about a book which I absolutely adore. I'll tell you about how it has touched me, but the book is called The Gentleman from Ohio, and that gentleman is about, the book is about the late, great, and honorable Lewis Stokes.
And thank you.
Your dad.
Yes.
Now, we lost your dad about a year ago, but prior to his death, when he indicated that he was battling cancer, that came about the story of his life story coming out, and which resulted in The Gentleman from Ohio.
You're right, Sybil. He was able to complete the book about 2 weeks before he passed. He passed on August 18th. I was his caregiver the last 3 months of his life and had gone to the home in a suburb of Cleveland to help take care of him. Mm-hmm. And we did not disclose immediately that he was suffering from brain cancer and lung cancer until we were sure that it was going to be terminal and that everything had been exhausted. And I think we basically released a public statement around the 17th of July, something like that. But this was such a dream come true for him in many respects that he had completed it prior to his passing, and he also knew it was going to be published about a week before he passed.
The timing of all of this was just, it was almost kind of magical and mystical, and yet just to know that it was coming to fruition just must have meant so much.
Well, I'll tell you, I was speaking with someone the other day, and we were talking about that it's almost as if he really wrote his entire life. Who lived to be 90 years old, came from the projects and poverty of Cleveland, Ohio, worked as a paper boy, worked as a shoeshine boy, was Cleveland's first salesman as a 17-year-old. He had started working as a porter, and it was sort of on a whim that the store manager said, "Lewis, let's try you as a salesman and see if that can be done."
Wow.
And he said, "But you have to understand, if this doesn't work, then you have to go back to being a porter." And he said he understood. And he became a salesperson until he was drafted to the Army, came back, wanted to go to school. His mother, who was a domestic, said, "I need you to work. I don't have the money to put you through school." He ended up using the GI Bill and putting himself working for the government, doing clerical work, put himself through school, through law school, went to do stop and frisk. That was his argument.
He argued before the Supreme Court.
Which was a dream come true. First of all, he idolized Thurgood Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And when this case came to them, it was called a cold case, where, you know, someone was in jail and they asked, "Is there a lawyer nearby that can help you out?" And Lou Stokes' name came up.
Uh-huh.
So he got the cold call. He did not know John Terry, but was told about the case and believed very much in the Fourth Amendment and that you had to have probable cause. And he was certain that John Terry's personal rights had been violated. It was a time, much like today, when minorities, African Americans, Hispanics, other minorities are at oftentimes pulled over or stopped and frisked for no apparent reason at times. So, yes, my father argued that, ended up taking it to Supreme Court. It was 8-1, a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And although he wasn't happy about losing, he was so proud that he had had, the United States Supreme Court define the Fourth Amendment more closely to define stop versus stop and frisk versus search, and that he had had a lifelong dream that it was one of the top landmark decisions that this country's ever had.
And he was, we're talking to Laurie Stokes, and I get so excited because the book is called The Gentleman from Ohio. And here it is, a man who was such a student of history, mm-hmm. also such a significant history maker. That's not always the case. And certainly, as you said, he was the first African-American from the city of Cleveland, from Ohio.
From the state of Ohio, Ohio. And remains the only African-American male sent to the U.S. Congress from the state of Ohio. And yes, you know, beyond his work as a lawyer, certainly when he was sworn in to represent his constituency mm-hmm. In Cleveland to the United States Congress, you know, he had he knew he was there for a purpose. Mm. He knew he was there to break ground, to not just be a qualified black legislator, mm-hmm. but to be a qualified legislator, period.
Right.
But he also was always cognizant of who he represented and the needs of those without a voice. He knew that it was his responsibility to raise issues that are of concern to those who are disadvantaged, whether it's education or housing or health. He never lost sight of any of that. They knew that they could put him there and they could take him out.
Wow.
And that, you know, that was his role.
Such a standard that he set for everybody. And it reminds me of what we've kind of gotten away, not kind of, what we have gotten away from, Lori. And that is when we were growing up and our parents talked to us about we had to jump higher and mm-hmm. aim higher and be twice as good or three times as good than the others because we weren't getting anything on our own. We had to just get out there and be twice as good than the other kids. As my mother used to say, the other kids aren't paying your tuition. You know, and your dad held everybody to that standard that we've kind of gotten away from.
He absolutely did. It's interesting that you use the terminology and the phrase of aiming higher. Because when my father signed his autographs, he would write, "Aim High, Lewis Stokes."
Wow.
And in fact, my mother and I just had that put on his monument at his gravesite, "Aim High, From Poverty to the Halls of Congress." Because he did understand that there is a different standard for people of color.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, no matter if it's in 1925 when he was born or 2016 today, there just is. And whether or not you have to be reminded of that, that could be a situation. You know, we've come so far. I think of my children that I've raised and tried to raise them the right way, and they've benefited from having, a comfortable life. But I've always, just as my father had done with me, to drum in their head, what I've done is what I've done.
Yeah.
But you have to be out here, and you have to be the best and prove to others that there, you know, there's no excuse for you not. Yes, you're right, Sybil, when you say that you have to do it harder. You have to do it harder and better. I was just talking with Craig Voice the other day. Mm-hmm. Craig was the dean at Cleveland Marshall Law School. He's now the dean of Syracuse's Law School. And he had given me an endorsement, along with so many other people, for my father's book. And we were talking about my father's character. And he had just said the phrase of having to do it right.
Mm.
And that defined a lot of how my father led his life as well and tried to impose that on others, just to do things right. You know, be able to look in the mirror and know that you've done the best job you could do. You didn't try and be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that no one can refute that you've done it the right way.